Welcome back to episode 119 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to highlight the glories of ratings gain, but often we dive into the plateaus and perhaps below that, the pits of despair. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. And I want to thank our queen level supporters, Scott D4B6, Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and King level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, you should fill out the Google form and the show notes. Also, you can message me on Twitter, two great places. If you're interested in Noel Studer's next level training program, you can use the code in the show notes below. It helps you, it helps the show. And I say we get on to the task at hand. We've got Max. You might remember Max. He's a dedicated adult improver. He was on episode 14 and returns nearly 2 years later to share with us the wisdom that he's gained from a lot of tournament play. I have to assume he's at least a grandmaster by now, possibly a super grandmaster. Max, welcome to the show. Have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me back again. It's amazing to see how the show has evolved over the past 2 years. I've played some chess. I've mostly just played some blitz. You know, I had a tournament this past weekend. The funny thing is that it's actually the exact same tournament that I had won 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But let's just say it wasn't as eventful this time around. I actually had to withdraw due to having a bit of an illness. So I only got to play 3 games. I did get to play a grandmaster in one of them, which was my first time playing a GM over the board.
Okay.
So definitely a good experience there.
How did that feel, by the way? Like, did you just feel totally outclassed? Were you able to kind of hang with them, or at least you thought you were?
I definitely felt outclassed. I mean, see, sometimes people, when they get faced with a very strong opponent, they kind of modify their playing style. They'll be like, okay, I'm just going to play super solid. I didn't do that. I just wanted to play my stuff and, you know, attack him. And you know, I had the white pieces, so I wasn't going to play for a draw. I was just trying to play the way I would normally play. And, you know, if it doesn't go my way, I'll learn something from the game. Mm-hmm. And obviously, he was well prepared. I knew kind of the moves that I was supposed to play in the opening. And then he played one move that I already didn't really know. And I thought for like 10 minutes, I was already thrown off. And yeah, it just ended up being a situation that he was a lot more comfortable in. Mm. And so, you know, I did see a lot of the lines, which he also saw. The problem was I just didn't know how to stop his attack. Like, you know, he's coming at me and I see what's coming, but what am I supposed to do about it? So yeah, it was it was a tough game, but it was interesting. At least we got to discuss.
I think it's interesting that you just said, like, I was the white pieces, I wanted to attack, and then like one sentence later, you're like, and then he was attacking me, and I'm like, wait, well, I thought you were supposed to attack him, Max.
What happened? Oh yeah, it was that's the thing with like sharp positions. It was kind of like this knight or dragon hybrid.
Oh.
And it's like one or two moves, you know, I make small inaccuracies, and all of a sudden I'm the one who's getting attacked. And it's like, I see all these pieces are coming towards the queen side. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? It's just a nightmare.
And I take it you castled queen side because it's a knight.
Yeah, arm. Yeah. It was one of those positions that's just very sharp. And yeah, man, tough game.
Okay. And so you feel like, actually, I guess I should say, do you feel like that person deviated in the open to get you out of your prep? Or did you feel like, or did they say like, no, this is what I normally play. Like, this is my prep.
I think he played what he would have played against someone strong. I mean, this is a 5-round tournament. So like, he can't afford to really... you know, any setbacks, like he's trying to win the tournament, of course. So, you know, he's taking me seriously. And this is someone that I actually, a grandmaster that I know, and I've even analyzed it a little bit. So like, he knows that I'm a strong enough player. So yeah. He's not going to underestimate me. But yeah, it was just, it was a very sharp position where it's like, he played a move, which he told me was like an improvement over some chessable course or something. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. Something that
you know
I
you're in
seen,
trouble.
So it was tough for me.
Someone's improving over the chessable course you have. You're like, oh, that's
yeah,
not good.
Serious stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I always just wonder if some GMs will be like, all right, I know this guy is really booked up, so I'll just sidestep him with this one move that's still fine, but it'll just completely take him out of book. So I wasn't sure if that's what he was doing.
Yeah, they definitely do that sometimes, but yeah, no, this guy played like, I mean, it was definitely not a main line, but it was sort of a tricky sideline where he was well prepared, so yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So I figure we should kind of get talk about where you were. It looks like by your rating, you were like 2039 the last time we were on. Does that sound
Right.
accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And you had like won some tournaments recently and were really on the rise. I feel like you were feeling really good about your chess at that time. Is that accurate?
So yeah, I had broken 2000 at the Eastern Chess Congress in 2021. I had a really good tournament, won 5 out of 5. The next tournament actually was also eventful. I scored a big upset, beating the 2300 for the first time ever.
Wow.
And then I had a couple more really good events. I was actually 2090 at the end of November of 2021.
All right.
I had one kind of slightly unsuccessful tournament, but then by February, I was actually able to break 2100 at actually a tournament which we talked about last time, the Amateur Team East, which
Okay.
is this amazing event which takes place in New Jersey every year. Huge team tournament, over 300 teams. And I personally scored 5 out of 6, which was pretty good. I mean, I had some draws against the lower rated that I was a little bit upset about, but my team actually also scored 5 out of 6, which meant that
Oh,
we got the best state team prize. So
that's
I was on a high. I mean, I broke
yeah.
2100. Our team had this big success. And from there, I only played one small club tournament before my next big planned event, which was open at Foxwoods. So Foxwoods is like this casino resort in the middle of nowhere in Connecticut. And my plan was to play in the under 2200 section, and I was like studying really hard, trying to prepare myself. And I went to that tournament. I started off on 4 out of 4. I mean, I was killing it. I mean,
Oh, wow.
again, I wasn't like destroying people. They were very close games, but I was managing to come up clutch in some key moments. And then I started to lose my momentum a bit. In the fifth round, I kind of took a draw in a better position because I wasn't really sure how to proceed. I didn't want to risk anything. And then on the last day, things just did not go well. I lost to this kid who was like 2100, who later became a master, maybe like 5, 6 months later. And then I drew the last game. I was just out of steam. And this is something that has been an issue for me that maybe we can get into more later, is just keeping the energy level in these long events that are like 3, 4 days or more. But still, I mean, I gained like 20 points in that tournament. I was at maybe 21, 20-ish in April of 2022. And so I was feeling like, okay, if I keep up this pace, you know, I'll be master like by the end of the summer, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so the next event is this tournament called the Cherry Blossom Classic in May, which actually had been my first tournament after the pandemic. And so this is like the 1 year mark of me coming back to Over the Board Chess. And the irony is that that first time that I'd played this tournament, I was kind of like this 1900 who played against all these 2100s, you know, scored some upsets, made some draws, and gained a lot of points. Now I'm in the opposite position where I am the 2100 and maybe like the number eighth or maybe top 10 ranked player in the section under 2300, and I have to play against all these underrated kids. And so I go into the tournament, first game on black against this 1900 kid, I lose. I just make kind of one mistake in the opening, I get outplayed. Okay, it happens. Second game, I'm white against this 1800 like woman candidate master, like one of these up and coming kids. She holds me to a draw. I'm like, what is going on? I'm on 5 out of 2. The third game, I get paired against another kid, actually the number one 7-year-old in the country. So he's
Oh,
1840.
that's
I'm
scary.
terrified at this point. I'm like, my tournament's already off to a bad start. I have to play these like super prodigies. Like, I was actually like so locked in, and that really helped me because I actually played one of my best games ever. Like, I blew this kid off the board in a King's Indian. And so
Nice.
that gave me kind of a boost, thinking like, okay, I can make this tournament good again. I won the next game. And then the last three games, I lost all of them.
Oh,
And it was all just, it would come down to like one little mistake, maybe somewhere being inattentive or, yeah, just miscalculating something, missing a tactic. Like the last game was especially painful because I had been playing against another one of these kids, was like 9 or 10, rated 1900, who was like spending more time walking around the tournament hall than actually at the board. I probably spent like 30 or 40 moves and all this time building up like a slow advantage, just gradually outplaying him here and there. And then finally, when we get to the critical moment where he finally kind of blunders, like makes a move too quickly, and I have a chance to like really take advantage and probably close out the game, I just rush and I miss this like very simple deflection tactic that he finds, and then the game's just over. I lose.
Yeah.
So that tournament brought me down to reality real quickly, because I was at 21-24, I think, going into the event. And I came out with a rating of 2065. I lost almost 60 points.
Oh, wow.
So okay.
I got a couple questions about this tournament. The first one is, why did you put yourself in the spot? Why not just play up, get more points, get ever closer to your goal, which I assume was 2200?
So do you mean play up as in like play in the open section instead of under 2300?
Yeah, it just feels like if you're going to be near the top seed, you know, you were that person last year, right? Chasing those top seeds, looking at them like they're fresh meat, right? Ready to be taken down. I'm just curious, what was the mentality there? Were you like, I want to win my section?
That's true, yes. And that's actually something which has sort of been an issue for me over the past year or two, is that I've been determined. You know, I had won this under 2100 section. Before that, I actually won an under 2000 section. It was an online tournament, but it was still a pretty good victory for me. So I've been kind of determined to win like an under 22 or under 2300 section before basically then moving on and only playing in the open section.
That makes sense. Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I felt like, you know, there's still players higher rated than me, so I have to just beat some of these lower rated and play up. But when that doesn't happen, then you're stuck playing down, you know, at game after game after game.
Yeah.
And so I was playing against basically all 18 and 1900s. And, you know, when you lose or draw against them, that really tanks your rating.
Yeah, I feel like we're all kind of in a tough spot right now, where it's like, if you want to gain rating points, you pretty much have to play up, because if you play at your spot, the people rated below you are often either just as good as you or close enough to be somewhat insignificant. And it's I found it personally to be a bit frustrating. Anytime I play up, I gain lots of points. If I'm like, no, I want to learn how to win against my rating level, it's like, well, now I have to be prepared to give up about 50 points in this tournament.
Yeah, no, it's very difficult. And especially one of the trends that I've observed recently is that there are just so many more people playing up now.
Yeah.
It's like, it used to be that if you're, let's say, playing in like an average tournament under 2100 section, you would have at least like a dozen 2000s. Were playing there, and a good amount of 1900s. And now it just feels like all those 2000s are playing in the open section because they want to play up against the 21-2200s. Yeah. Even some of the 1900s don't want to play in the under 2100 because they're like, I want to go play in the open with the big dogs.
Yeah.
And so if you want to actually play in your own section, yeah, you're left either like playing down a ton, or yeah, I mean, it's just hard to find like an even match. And then when you're in the open section, like I actually had one of my other recent tournaments. This was an open section of a 5-round continental chess event. And out of, I think, the 36 players in the open section, 14 were rated under 2000.
Oh, wow.
Like they're all these 1900 kids. And they were all, I mean, not all, but most of them were outperforming their ratings. Like I also kind of got off to a rough start in this tournament.
Yeah.
And so my third game, I'm playing a 1900. I win. I play another 1900 who was overperforming. I win that game. Guess what? I'm playing another 1900. My third, fourth, and fifth games are all against 1900s in an open section. Wow. So this is just what happens. Like you just have these kids who are playing up, and they are genuinely, you know, pretty good for their ratings, and they're on the upwards trajectory.
Yeah, and I think you're in a tougher spot, at least than I am, right? Like if I'm, say, like my rating dropped under 1700, so I can play in the under 1700 section, I can play up and still be in the under 1900, or even play up two and still be in the under 2100. I don't have to jump all the way to open just to play up. So I feel like it's kind of a big jump, knowing that like the top are still like 2000s are very good, but I don't feel like I can't even hang with them at all. Whereas like if I had to play up and play GMs, I'd be like, okay, never mind. Like this is ridiculous. Like I know I don't have a chance here.
Right, because the open section is usually the one with the greatest kind of it could be greatest difference in levels, right? I mean, you have like you could have 1900, 2000s, and then there's grandmasters with like, you know, 2600 plus USCF ratings. So that definitely tends to happen where it's kind of a bouncy situation where it's like you might play a 1900 and then you're paired way up, you come down and you hope that by the end of the tournament you get a couple games against someone close to your level.
Yeah,
but it's really just dependent on how well your tournament's going and how many players are really in the section. I think if you have a really good turnout with maybe like 50 or 60 plus players, you will tend to get a more even matchup, like even by, let's say, the third round. But if it's less players, then yeah, I might just you might just end up being pared down a bunch.
All right. My next question about this tournament is, how are you feeling after this? Like, are you devastated? Are you like, man, I had my eyes on Master by the end of the summer, now I'm spiraling? Or you were able to just kind of be like, hey, that was one tournament. It wasn't even that bad. It's just I got pared down against some really good players. Like, how'd you handle it emotionally?
Yeah, it was definitely tough at first. I mean, it was a big hit. And it was the kind of thing where I was actually relieved when I saw that I only lost 59 points. Like, I actually thought it could be a bit worse.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of just understood that that's what happens, especially when you're making mistakes that are so tactical in nature. It's like one move can really just end the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't too, you know, at that point, it was almost like funny, like how bad it was. So I've kind of managed to get over it pretty quickly. And I played another event a couple weeks later, and I actually managed to start getting back on the right foot. I gained like 20 points back.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I thought that maybe I could be a master by the end of the summer. I just barely got over 2100 again, like by August. So it was definitely a tough time. Like, I played some big tournaments, played the World Open, played this tournament called the Washington International, where, you know, you're playing against some tough players, some that are underrated. So yeah, I think I was about 2115 at the end of August.
Huh.
And then I actually sort of found my groove. And by September of 2022, I managed to hit a peak at the time of 2145.
Okay, we're back in the Masters hunt. We're back.
Yeah, I went 3 out of 3 in like a local club event. I actually beat a master in the last round. So yeah, I was starting to feel good again. And then my next tournament, I think it was, yeah, this was the early October of 2022. This is another interesting one, because this is actually at the same venue in Virginia where this bad tournament that I had where I lost 60 points is. It was something about that location in the year 2022 that was off for me. Uh-oh. I go into this event. I'm now playing in the open section.
Okay. Was that specifically so you wouldn't lose rating points?
So, well, this one, actually, I didn't have a choice because the next section was under 2100.
Okay.
This one didn't have like an under 2300 that I could try to win. This one, I basically had to play open, but I wanted to do that because, yeah, I like there were some masters that I think there was maybe a grandmaster even in the section. But in the first round, I'm playing this kid who's like maybe in the mid 1900s in a dragon, very sharp game. I'm outplaying him. But I spend a lot of time. This is another thing that's been kind of an issue for me throughout the years, is just time management and just spending too long on positions that I should just be just playing faster because the position is not yet critical enough to warrant like a 10 or a 15 minute think. But I remember there was just one moment where I saw this move that looked kind of like interesting. It was like this sacrifice that I thought maybe it could lead to a big attack. And then I thought for 15 minutes and realized that it just doesn't. It doesn't work. And I should just not go all in like that.
Yeah.
But the problem was that by the time that the opportunity presents itself to actually calculate precisely and win the game, because my opponent had sort of made a mistake, I only have 10 minutes left.
Ooh.
And so I see kind of the possibilities, but the position is super sharp and there's like a few different moves to consider, a few different ideas. And in kind of the critical line that I needed to find, there was one move that I didn't see. So I just played the wrong move. And when I look back at the game after, the position, that critical position where I needed to calculate, I mean, the advantage that the engine gives is like astronomical. Like, the longer you let it sit, the higher the number will be. But it was, to give you an example, it was like probably plus 10 or plus 15. I mean,
it's
a forced line where like he has to give up his queen to not allow check.
Okay.
And so I was actually very close to finding that, but because I only had 10 minutes, I ended up kind of getting tempted by a different move. And it was the kind of thing where it went from that in crazy big advantage to five moves later, I'm losing. And was it was just a total collapse.
Did you pick that line because you were just able to see a little more clearly and you could see like, okay, it looks like I have a slight advantage here. I'll take this line.
I mean, I went for a move which I thought was winning, but I had missed some resource that he had.
Okay.
And yeah, all of a sudden it goes from, you know, winning to equal, and then another mistake later, I'm losing.
My question is, if you were playing against the dragon, why didn't you do the Fisher sack mate method? Like, what stopped you from doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I was on the verge, but yeah, it's not that simple always, right? You gotta calculate.
Oh, so you're saying my knowledge of the dragon is not complete. Okay.
I mean, sack mate would have been pretty much the way to go, but yeah, you have to find the right way to sack mate.
Ah, the correct tempting options. Fisher never said that.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So I lost that game, and then the next game, I also get outplayed by this kid who was like 1900 with like a 1600 FIDE rating. And then the game after, I'm like winning against this kid, and I mess it up, and I draw. That was very frustrating. I ended up that tournament with 2.5 out of 6, exclusively playing low-rated players. I don't think I even played a single player above 2,000.
Oh, wow. And this is in the open section.
Yeah, once again, I mean, this is what happens. If you get off to a bad start and you don't kind of like hit the ground running, you're stuck playing against these low-rated players who are, you know, having a decent tournament. So I actually went under 2,100 again. I was, I think, at 2,136 or so going in, and I went to like 2,092. So it was another big hit.
Okay, and quick pause on this. What are you doing to study to improve in this period? Like, what is your plan looking like?
I mean, it's more or less the same. Analyzing my games a bit, kind of playing some rapid and some blitz in addition, and analyzing that. To be fair, though, over the past year or two, I haven't been as diligent with analyzing. I have still a lot of games that I've kind of neglected, and I think part of the reason is that I kind of developed this sense that like when I analyze a game, I really have to go like Jesse Cry style and really spend hours on it. And that's what I would do.
Yeah.
But it kind of puts this big pressure that like you need to do that for every game.
Yeah.
And so then I look back, like I have a tournament, I have all these games, and it's like each one of them is going to take all this time. Let's put it off a little bit. I'll get to it at some point.
Yeah.
So it ends up being a thing where like the games pile up and pile up. And if I could show you my table right now, I have all these score sheets of all these games that I need to get to. And I look at them periodically here and there, but at this point I really need to just kind of put that like super in-depth thing aside and maybe even just spend, you know, 30 minutes or an hour on each game. Probably be better than just not looking at them at all. So yeah, I think that that's definitely something that I need to get back on track with doing better.
Okay.
But to continue, I mean, I went under 2,100 and I kind of stayed a little bit on the verge of that for the rest of the year up until the end of December, where this was another tournament where I was playing in the open section again. Actually, previously to that, I'd played in this tournament called the National Chess Congress. And this is another tournament that I went into with big ambitions. I wanted to win the under 2,200 section because the previous year I'd scored 4.5 out of 6. I was very close.
Oh, yeah.
And this year I scored 4 out of 6 and again played all my games down, like lost like 10 points or something. And yeah, it was just, this was something that confirmed to me that I need to stop just trying to play like in these under 2,200 sections because there's just not so much for me to gain anymore. I need to play in the open.
Yeah, because that sounds like a great score. You're like, I got 4 out of 6, maybe even won some prize money, and then lost rating points, which is
Exactly. Horrible. Yeah, no, it's like if you don't get 5 out of 6, then it's nothing.
Yeah, you're like, I'll give back the prize money if you give me back the points.
So, yeah, the last tournament that I played in the year 2022, this tournament called the Eastern Open, also in Virginia, and it was an 8-rounder, so a pretty big event, 4 days. And this is a tournament where I went in like probably not even in the top half. I think I was probably around middle of the pack or maybe bottom.
Huh?
And like first round, I come in, I play an international master, the highest rated I'd ever played
over the board, and actually it was a very close game, but just the sheer pressure of playing such a strong opponent led me to kind of like lash out, or I really just needed to be solid. And of course I ended up just getting outcalculated and lost. But it was an interesting experience. And then after winning my next game in the third round, I'm playing against another international master. And this game, I actually managed to catch him a little bit off form. There was one moment where he missed his big winning chance, which, I mean, we just both overlooked. But the rest of the game, it was just, I was attacking him and pressing, and I managed to convert my advantage, score this amazing win.
Whoa, okay, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big moment for me. I mean, especially in terms of confidence, right? Like knowing that I can potentially beat these very strong players.
You're 1-1 now against international masters. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And then continue that tournament. I had some draws and some wins against some more masters. Again, I finished not so well. Like in the penultimate round, I was playing this 2300 master, and I kind of like caught him kind of misplaying the opening a bit. And there was a moment where I could have like had a huge advantage, and I kind of I saw the move that I needed to play, but I decided like it was a little too risky. Let's just play more solid. And then, you know, he started to outplay me in a really sharp position. I lost that game. And the final game I also drew, where I had some winning chances, but still 4.5 out of 8 I scored.
Okay.
Performance rating of over 2300.
Sounds great.
Very big for me. And I managed to gain like 50 points back.
Ooh, okay.
Get back up to like 2147 or so, like in, you know, close to 2150.
Mm-hmm.
So this was good. And then start of 2023, I had one tournament which was not so great. I lost a little bit of points, but then I had another good tournament where I actually hit the highest rating that I've had to date, which is 2162.
So close.
Just at a local club, just had a couple good games against some good strong masters. And then started another tumultuous period in early 2023. So after this good tournament in January, I played the amateur team East again in February, lost a couple points. I mean, there was one game, really, I mean, me losing rating that tournament just came down to one game where I was off like 4 hours of sleep. And I played this very underrated 1500 high schooler who, he was putting up a really good fight. I still should have won the game, but then after many hours of playing, just being tired, I blundered like a fork and ended up in this opposite color bishop endgame, up two pawns that I couldn't win. Very frustrating. But still, I was at around 2160.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play this other club event. And in the second round, I play against this like 1800 who had like kind of just come back to tournament chess. And I played kind of a risky opening, a modern, and I made one little mistake, and this guy just wiped the floor with me. Like, I got blown off the board. It was like one mistake, and then boom, 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 boom. I get like checkmated on move 25.
Oh my goodness.
And the rest of the tournament was also kind of disastrous.
Yeah, like when 1800s come back, I found them to be quite a bit weaker because, you know, they're not used to the over the board, and you know, they're not as strong as they once were, and they're maybe a little overrated now with where ratings are. So that must have been.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's a guy who was like around my age, maybe early 20s. Maybe a little bit underrated, maybe like 1900 strength, but it was kind of a case of I just made one mistake and the play just kind of just flowed so much in his favor. He just was able to just carry out this initiative, and it was very hard for me to do anything. And then, yeah, it was another tournament where I was just playing down a bunch of games. And so I lost like maybe 20 or 25 points, but still at around 2140. You know, it's like when you have one bad tournament, you know, it's whatever.
Sure.
But then I have another tournament that's also, I end up like just dominating this 1900 for many, many moves. And then I get into a time scramble and I kind of had this hallucination and I end up losing. And so that was another hit. I took another like 20 or 25 points that I lost. And then another tournament at the end of April now, where I actually traveled to Maryland to play in this another under 2300 section, which was like very interesting because this tournament had like an open, an under 23, and an under 21. So basically they had like small sections, but with very close ratings. And so this was actually something I was looking forward to, you know, playing against people very close to me in rating, because you know, when you're playing these opens, sometimes you'll get paired way up, play 2300, or you come down paying play 1900. This was the case for me for a couple tournaments. And so this tournament, I really did play a lot of players within, let's say, 50 or 60 points of me.
Nice.
But some of those games were just, very unfortunate. Like one game, I'm better out of the opening, in control. And then I think that I can just outcalculate my opponent in this kind of sharp situation. And instead, I just allow a ton of counterplay and just get checkmated, basically.
Gotcha.
And the next game was another very painful one. I'm just kind of like perfect preparation out of the opening, dominating this kid 2100. And then there's this moment where I'm up a pawn in a heavy piece endgame, but engine gives this position as +7. I mean, I just need to basically stay on course like and keep attacking. But in my mind, it's like, I'm up a pawn in endgame. Why don't I just trade queens, right? Because rook endgame should be winning.
Sure.
And so I do that, and it turns out that rook endgame is no longer winning. And to make things worse, I then proceed to lose that endgame because he gets a pass pawn that I underestimate, and I end up with 3 connected pawns against his rook, but those pawns aren't going anywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, that was, like, really when I hit rock bottom. I went down to 2079, like, basically 1 year later after having gone under 2100 the first time.
It sounds to me like you played a lot between January and April. Was that sort of your normal cadence, or did you decide to kind of, like, amp it up because you were like, I'm on the cusp of 2200. I want to close this thing out.
I wouldn't say that I really played much more. I mean, in 2022, there was a period where I was only playing maybe once a month or a month and a half.
Okay.
Over the past year, I'd say I roughly play about every 3 weeks or so. And I kind of like that pace because it gives me time to kind of recover, especially if it's like a big event. And of course, review the games and so on, try to understand like what I need to be working on.
Or not review the games.
And so, yeah, I was playing roughly every 3 weeks and during this period. But every 3 weeks, it was like another minus 20 points. Yeah. And so, yeah, I go into May as a 2079. Finally, I started to recover. I got maybe just to under 2100. And then in June, I actually had a really good club event where I managed to win back a ton of points, get back to 2140. This is June 2023 now. And then my last time, probably ever playing in the under 2200 section. This was in the World Open. I mean, I felt like, okay, this is my last shot. I've played the World Open twice before. First time I scored 4 out of 9 in the under 2200. Second time, 6 out of 9. We'll see what I can do this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was that, okay, so I signed up for the 5-day section, which in the World Open has 3 different, basically, schedules you can play. You can play the 5-day, which is all long games, like 90 plus 30, I think, maybe with like another sudden death. You have a 4-day, which you play, I think, 2 short games, and then you play the rest long. And there's 3-day where you play a bunch of like 30-minute games, yeah. And then you join the rest of the fields by like round 5 or 6. So I start off in the 5-day, and I'm playing this another kid who was like maybe 9 or 10, 1900, and I'm like playing really smoothly. I'm close to winning, but position is very complicated, and I'm starting to get low on the clock. And there's one moment where I just need to find like this again, 1 or 2 moves, but we're both like playing on seconds, and I make this one move, which takes my advantage from -6 because I was black, like basically 6 points in my favor, to +5 for him.
Whoa. Wow.
So I lose this game just like that. And so I felt like, okay, no, this is just unjust. I can't start my tournament like this. So I actually re-entered. Which is an extremely risky decision.
Yeah.
Gamble, basically, because you have to pay an additional fee to re-enter the tournament.
Yep.
But I felt like, you know, this is my last shot. I have to try.
Okay.
And it was looking like a pretty smart decision, because then those 2 short games, I won the first game, I drew the second. When I won my next couple games, I was on 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
But as I mentioned, maintaining energy has been an issue for me throughout the tournaments. Partially, I think it is due to sleep.
Hmm.
A lot of times I feel like I'm kind of inconsistent with my sleep just in my normal life. Like some nights, you know, it's better than others, but especially in a tournament, it kind of gets amplified, especially like if your diet is off. You know, sometimes it's hard to find good places to eat and so on. And like if rounds go late, there's also that factor.
Mm-hmm.
So before the 4th day, I slept very poorly. And for the first hour of the game, like, I've never felt worse. Like, I just wanted to go home and sleep. And yeah. so I was black against this guy. He's like also, you know, one of the leaders of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I offered him a draw out of the opening because I was like, you know, if I can just survive this game, I'll be happy. But he said no. You know, he felt like he's white. He wants to play on.
Yeah.
But I understood that actually, if he continues to play on, he's actually starting to risk things. And so this ended up working out in my favor. Suddenly, I realized that I have chances, and I kind of managed to seize control of the game. And probably like 3-4 hours later, I ended up with the win. And so I was on 5.5 out of 6, and I was feeling like, wow, this actually could be something here. And so in round 7, I'm playing against the only other guy in 5.5 out of 6. And this game was just not the best for me because one of the issues that I had was that I had become sort of too predictable in my openings. My main opening was just very obvious. I kind of like played the same line a lot. And so he prepared well. And I mean, props to him. He just played like a very nice game and he won. But still, 5.5 out of 7, you know, if I'll get at least like 1.5 or 2 points out of the last 2 games, I can definitely finish in the prizes.
Yeah.
But it's the last day and the energy levels are just depleting really quickly. And that morning game was just really rough. Like, I mean, I almost lost with white. Miraculous hold. Like, my opponent really should have won the game. And of course, also, another tough thing is that by that point in the tournament, when you're leading, you're playing against other strong players who are also doing well. So it doesn't get any easier. The last game I played against like an underrated, maybe high 1900. And we both had a lot of chances, but again, like a 5-hour game, which ended in a draw.
Hmm.
And so I finished with 6.5 out of 9, which, you know, sounds pretty good, but not great enough to finish in the prizes. And also not even enough to gain that much rating because of that loss that I had before I re-entered. It cost me a lot of points.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I ended up only gaining 5 points after all those, you know, seems like I had such a great event, but
yeah.
Left with not too much to show for it. And since then, you know, that summer, this past summer, I played 4 tournaments, which are either 7 or 9 rounds. And I feel like I did not go into single one of those games like perfectly fresh. Like either I would be tired from just kind of not sleeping so well the night before, or if it's the afternoon game, then I'm tired from the morning game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the World Open was the case. Next tournament was another the next tournament was a 7-rounder. And this was a funny tournament where I drew 5 consecutive games.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. This is like, has never happened to me before. Like usually I'm, you know, someone who either wins or loses because of my sharp play style, but I had just several games in a row where I was just making some mistake, failing to convert my advantage and drawing the game. And, you know, when I finally won at the end of the tournament, it was like the biggest relief ever because I was starting to feel like a GM where I was just drawing every single game.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it's been kind of up and down a little bit. I've been around the mid-2150s for the past couple of months, like 2140, 2150, 60, bouncing around a little bit. But yeah, it's more or less where I've been at. Been hopeful to break through, but definitely still some work to be done.
Yeah, it sounds like you're just hanging out and right on the cusp and just waiting for that really great event to pop you over the edge. I guess my biggest question is, do you feel like it's been like such a focus on you that it's sort of like draining you inherently? Or are you able to just kind of put that aside and be like, hey, I'm going to hit 2200 at some point. It's not something I'm obsessing over. Because I know if it were me, I would be obsessing over. I would be like, okay, what do I have to do to hit 2200? This is the goal. Like, there are no other goals in life right now. I just need to hit this. I don't know. Where are you at with that goal?
Yeah, well, it's definitely my goal to do it by the end of this year, which, I mean, I only have 2 months left, so it's going to be tough, but I'm still hopeful that I can pull it off. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because every tournament is just like a reminder of how much more work I should be doing. Like, I'll play a game, be like, okay, I really need to just work more on my calculation. I need to work on some positional understanding and certain openings. If I just do this, you know, I could make that push and be there. And then, you know, a couple of days pass and it's like, okay, I could just play some blitz here and then analyze these games. And it seems like fun. So definitely, yeah, my training has not been the most efficient, let's say, over the last couple months. But yeah, with 2 months left in the year, I definitely feel like I'm going to be on top of my game, trying to, yeah, trying to work as much as possible to make it happen.
So are you going to do some calculation training then to be on the top of your game?
Yeah,
you're definitely something. Tell me you are and then not do it.
Definitely something I need to keep working on. I mean, that's not the only thing. I feel like my calculation is decent overall, but yeah, just like advantage conversion has definitely been one of the biggest things that has cost me. Like a lot of these, I mean, I feel like when I look at my losses, very few of them are like me getting outplayed. Like of course, if I'm playing a 2300 or higher and there's a big skill gap, yeah, probably I got outplayed somewhere. But when I'm losing against players of my level or even a bit lower, 9 times out of 10, it's because I had an advantage and I just either mismanaged my time or just, you know, didn't play the right move and let it slip away just because of poor technique or something like that. So,
yeah, I heard a lot of your tournaments where you would say, like, I was winning this game and it was a sharp position and I didn't find the right move. I was just wondering, like, do you feel like you're generally better in sharp positions and you win a lot of those games, or do you feel like, you know, you're losing a lot of the sharp positions?
I mean, on the over the overall big picture, I think I do win a good amount of those, but also those are some occasions where I can lose. And some, of course, are also just kind of technical positions where I have some advantage. Like Engine will say, oh, it's like +2.5, +3, but it's not that simple. You know, you have to find some way to kind of like keep the pressure on and slowly improve the position. That's another thing that's very tricky, is kind of patience.
Yeah.
A lot of times you feel like, okay, I have this big advantage. I need to just, you know, find that one or two moves and just win the game. But it's not always that simple. Sometimes you have to just keep the pressure on and kind of let your opponent beat themselves almost.
Yeah, and, I'd say that's, I've gone through a lot of Karpov games, and that's been my biggest takeaway from him, is like, he'll get this big attack and you're like, all right, where's the knockout punch? And I spend like 10 minutes calculating it. And I'm like, I don't see a knockout punch. And he's like, knockout punch. I'm just going to move my rook to the other side of the board and just, you know, win the game that way. And I'm like, wait, what? I thought we were winning this way. So yeah, it's kind of fascinating to watch him go to work like that.
Yeah, no, especially that's true. When you look at Grandmaster games, it's like, you think it's going to be about over, and then it's still, you know, 10 more moves of some slow buildup until the moment finally comes. So that's something that, you know, even in recent tournaments, I've noticed myself kind of having this like need to lash out too early when I feel like I'm winning. So
yeah, and like you said, I feel like even Karpov's opponents just totally collapse. Like, he doesn't have to actually win half the time. He just keeps on the pressure, you know, puts pressure on another part of the board, and eventually the psychological pressure is just too much and they make some awful move because they've been in a terrible position for like 2 hours, and eventually they just collapse.
Yeah, and I feel like that's one thing that the stronger players definitely understand more, is that you can just do that. Is like, I don't even need to, you know, do anything special. I just need to wait for them to fall apart. And whereas I'm like, okay, I need to win. Like, where's my win?
Yeah, exactly. And then the couple of times where I've been like, I'm just gonna let them fall apart, it's like, well, why didn't you pressure them? Like, you had an opportunity and now you just let them back in the game. And I'm like, but I was doing always the Karpov fear,
yeah. I feel like I always have that fear that even when I'm in a better position, it's like, if I don't do something active, then maybe they'll just consolidate, and who knows, which is possible. But usually, you know, it also comes with a certain understanding of the position. Like, sometimes the opponent just has certain kind of like chronic weaknesses in their position that, you know, no matter what, they can't really overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can just keep the pressure on. Other times, yeah, there's a chance though that if you don't, you know, capitalize right away, they can come back into the game. But
yeah,
a lot of it really is just understanding.
Okay. So something else I heard a lot about was energy, fatigue issues. And I think this is something that everyone sort of struggles with. Have you come up with any good strategies for helping bolster you for those last couple of days?
Not yet, to be fair. I mean, I haven't played in a like long tournament like that. I think my last tournament, I mean, when I say long events, usually I mean 7 rounders or more. So usually a tournament which is like 4 days plus. My last one was about 2 months ago at this point. I don't have a, I mean, my next big tournament is going to be 6 rounds. So that's, I mean, sort of on the verge of long, but not super long. So kind of fortunately, like, I don't have that many big tournaments in this kind of fall period. But yeah, I think when I do finally have one again, I'm just going to need to be really diligent with sleep, just, you know, trying to really get as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know what else there is to do, because I constantly feel like, you know, by the last day or two, I mean, I'm just not in that top sharp shape, mm-hmm. and it does cost me.
Yeah, I mean, what I tell myself when I feel that fatigue is just like, well, my opponent is feeling just as much fatigue, but it might also have to do with the openings I play, which tend to be a little less sharp, a little more solid, that maybe I feel like I can be a little tired and it's okay, where it sounds like the positions you're getting a little bit of fatigue might be, it might have a more dramatic effect on the game.
Yeah, that is true. Sometimes, I mean, yeah, if you have a really sharp position, then you have to calculate, you know, and if you're not there, it can definitely cost you. But yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna have to try to sleep more, have to be on top of my nutrition and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll see some improvements, but I don't know. It's definitely been frustrating, because it's like a couple of, you know, 7-9 rounders where it's like, I can just feel it the last round or two.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm not at that same level.
Yeah. I'm playing in Vegas at, end of December. And it's always, you know, like my friends are always like, oh, what do you do after the tournament? Do you gamble all night? And I'm like, I go to bed. Like I want to be in good shape the next day. I'm not going to stay up all night.
Yeah, I'm actually planning to play that tournament as well. My friend and I are flying out. I've always wanted to play in Vegas, and this will be the first time. But we're making sure to get in there a couple days early to do that stuff, so that during the actual tournament, we don't have to compromise our potential performances.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I always tell my family, they're like, so did you gamble? And I'm like, yeah, I did a rucksack, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't think that's funny, so I don't know. Another thing you said is you felt like you were getting in a spot where your openings were kind of predictable. Like, what did you two do to address that? Did you adopt some sidelines, or did you like develop a whole new repertoire?
So yeah, I actually, over the summer, you know, after this happened in the World Open, I realized that this is kind of an issue. And so I started working on something. Well, I actually started to think about working on something, but I didn't really start working on it until maybe like a month later, because I actually, one tournament that I didn't really talk about was over Labor Day weekend, so early September, I played in my first ever closed round robin event.
Ooh, that's
so this fun. There's this organization called NYC Chess Norms, which hosts some norm tournaments like every couple months. And so I was in the, like, basically international master qualifier section. So basically whoever wins that then actually gets to play in an IM norm event.
We
had 8 players in our section, so it was 7 rounds. And I knew that, you know, this is a tournament that people have weeks in advance to prepare for. So if I'm just going to go in and play the same stuff, you know, I'm a sitting duck.
Yeah.
So I started, you know, I made a secret account, which is something that I've never done before. I mean, I've always played on public accounts. I've never been scared of people preparing, you know, come at me.
Yeah.
But I did make a secret account and prepare a little bit with a different opening. And I did manage to play that in a couple of the games with reasonable success.
Okay.
There was one game where I played the opening and got a nice advantage. I wasn't able to convert, just again due to time trouble, kind of missed my chance, but it was still a pretty good game. And so that's been something now. So the issue though with that is that now I'm like in a place where it's like, what is really my main opening? Is it my old opening, or is it this new opening? What do I really want to play more? And this new one is, it's a line in the Sicilian.
Okay.
And the issue with the Sicilian is that there's all these sidelines, which that was one of the reasons why I was just reluctant to like get into it, is because I know, like, if I just go and play some random training games online, Blitz and Rapid, what are the chances that people actually play into this line? You know, it's like maybe 20% of the time, but the rest of the time it's going to be, you know, close Sicilian this, Grand Prix attack that. It's just so much to deal with. So
the Alapin is the main line nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been trying to basically save it for when I know someone plays into the open Sicilian. I'm going to play my little secret weapon.
That's cool.
If I have to deal with all these lines, then it's just too much of a headache.
It is why I stopped playing the Nidorf. I had played 20 years ago when things were less sharp. I came back. I was like, I'm playing my Nidorf. And people are like, no, you're not. You're going to play the Alapin and the close Sicilian. I was like, all right, never mind. I'm not going to spend 100 hours learning the Nidor to play against the Elf in every game.
Yeah, that's definitely how I feel, especially, you know, in Blitz, it's like you can't predict what your opponent's going to play. At least, you know, sometimes in tournaments, you can sort of prepare more and try to figure out who you're dealing with. But yeah, when you're just going in blind, it's like you're just asking to deal with all that stuff.
Yeah. So do you feel like for most club players, just keeping one repertoire is fine, and it's really not until you get to like the 2000 plus, or do you feel like it would have benefited you to have like adopted a second opening earlier?
Yeah, I think for club players, one opening should be fine. I mean, if you even can sort of switch up a little bit, maybe within your opening, you know, play certain sidelines or like deviate a little bit here and there, just so that you're not playing like the same thing every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like these days, because it's people have so much preparation and it's so easy to prepare that it is good to have like a secondary option.
Okay.
So it is something that I kind of wish I did sooner, like for that World Open game, for example, where my opponent just, you know, was able to prepare so easily for me. If I had already had this other option, it could have been a different story, but I'm glad I did it sooner, or I did it eventually rather than put it off even more.
Gotcha. Yeah. I've started doing that a little bit where like I play just a pretty mainline QGD, when I'm black, but then, you know, my coach was like, what if you just, you know, tweaked it a little bit and occasionally threw in the sideline? And I was like, okay. So I've been kind of doing that just a little bit, just to keep people a little bit honest. So
yeah, plus it helps you, you know, exposes you to maybe some slightly different positions, kind of expands your repertoire of what you're able to play. So can't hurt.
Well, that's a good point. I heard a lot of the same word just over and over. Kids, underrated kid, another underrated kid. What are we gonna do, Max? What's the solution to all underrated kids?
Man, yeah, I don't know. Actually, so the last game even actually that I played just this past weekend, this kid that I played, I mean, when I sat down on the board, I thought he was like 5 years old and his rating is 2000. I mean, I asked him how old he was after the game. He was 9, but this kid played unbelievably well. Like, I mean, I kind of made the mistake of playing into his preparation, which I could have dodged, but he just, I mean, I blundered in this one moment and he was able to get two minor pieces for a rook. And so we go into this end game where he has a rook and a knight and a bishop against a rook. And there's still a couple pawns on the board. And it's probably technically winning for him because he has a pass pawn, which I'm kind of blockading, but you know, it's like long term, he has some chances. But I was pretty sure that I could hold it or at least make it very difficult for him. Eventually, maybe I can give up my rook for the pawn. And what are the chances a 9 year old knows how to mate with a bishop and knight? You know, these days you never know, but yeah. I was confident that I could hold.
Yeah.
But this kid, I mean, and playing really quickly too, like kids do.
Yeah.
He displayed like unbelievable endgame technique. Like, and I wasn't even able to give up my rook for the pawn because he managed to sneak around and win a second pawn. And so at that point, I'm just finished. And yeah.
I thought the rumor was kids weren't good at endgames, Max. If we can't give that, what do we have?
And this is another thing. This has haunted me. One time I specifically basically played a line where you trade queens early against the kid because I thought like kids aren't good at endgames, so this is a smart choice.
Yeah.
And then he outplayed me that endgame. I mean, I overpushed, but eventually it ended up with like good knight against bad bishop, and that was it. So yeah, these days it's like you just can't stereotype these kids like that. I mean, they're good at everything. They're working with their coaches and man, their technique is like incredible at an early age.
So it sounds like you do not have tips for beating kids.
I mean, the biggest thing is probably just positional. I think that's one of the hardest things is I feel like their positional understanding is usually the thing that lacks the most because it's the thing which may be the hardest to kind of develop. Like it comes with a lot of experience.
Yeah.
So if you can kind of outplay them there, but yeah, I mean, there's so many kids these days that just get to 2000, 2100 just purely off like openings and tactics. And, you know, having a decent endgame understanding too, but yeah, it's crazy.
I've definitely found that, like, especially where I'm at, I'm playing a lot of like 1600 to 1800 kids. They're super strong at tactics and my openings tend to be pretty positional and I've had pretty good success with them. It's really once they're like past 1800 when I'm like, okay, now I'm in real trouble. Like, they've got their tactical chops and now they're really starting to get that positional understanding as well. And now I got to worry.
But positional understanding is still, it's tricky. Like I, you know, sometimes they'll prepare, which is another thing. Like these kids, they understand how to prepare now. They'll like find some opening, whatever, some variation. It's like really good. But then, you know, if they don't really understand like the intricacies of it, they can go wrong pretty quickly too. So
gotcha.
I feel like that's been the best way for me to punish some of these talented kids. But yeah, I mean, overall their games are pretty well rounded. So it's not as easy as you'd think.
I do feel like I found the answer to dealing with kids. You ready for this? The day this podcast, you can listen to it in the morning. It will be my birthday and I'll be 50. So this is the answer. You just only enroll in senior events. Then you're the kid.
There you go.
So I've actually been looking though. I can't find that many senior events. So I don't know. I don't know what happened to the senior events. They're not that common.
Yeah. No, I remember. I think I remember Jakob Augard in a different podcast saying that. That's like, when I turn senior, I'm just going to play closed events and, you know, everyone else can deal with these underrated Indians and everyone else that's impossible to beat.
So if you're out there and you know of some senior events, send them my way. I'm looking. Like a lot of the senior championships are for that state only. They're like explicitly will state, you know, Nevada residents only. And I'm like, I don't think it's worth me moving every month just to play in a different senior event. Like that just feels like too big of a commitment.
Yeah, that's pretty cool though. That, or even like, you know, those Alto events, haven't been able to make it to one yet, but hopefully at some point.
Yeah, I agree. The Alto ones look really, really fun. All right, I got to ask you this question. It's come up a lot in just the zeitgeist of chess lately. You've played a million tournaments in the last 2 years. Over the board cheating, do you feel like you're seeing it at all? Or even more, are you suspicious at all? Or do you just play your games and assume no one's cheating?
I wouldn't really say that I'm suspicious of it. I mean, yeah, I take a pretty relaxed approach to it. I mean, of course, like there are certain things that are like no-nos, like, you know, obviously you can't have phones around and you shouldn't be communicating. I mean, there was even, I remember an incident where my friend was playing and he was playing against this kid who, when it was my friend's move, he was like up and walking around the hall and like he was talking to one of his friends, which is, you know, just looks a little bit suspicious, you know. It's like when you're discussing something, you know, who knows what it is. But other than that, I'd say, pretty much I'm okay with it. I mean, there was also another thing where I was playing against the kid with this game was going on very long, and he was starting to get a bit flustered because like he was on the defensive end. And at one point his dad was like came up and was like saying something to him. And it was like in a different language. And I was like, what's going on? Like, you can't just be talking to him like in the middle of the game. But, you know, to be fair, he was probably just telling him to like relax and whatever. But, you know, these days it's like.
Or he was like, yo, I'm hungry. Can you wrap this thing up already?
Yeah.
Just offer him a draw, please.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean.
Okay. That's good. I mean, that's been my experience as well. There hasn't been really any suspicions of cheating. The worst one was it just felt like some guy was kind of clueless. It was like his first tournament back in the first round in the middle of his game. He was like taking selfies and taking pictures of people. And I was like, I don't think you know the rules. And the judge came over and was like, hey man, you can't have your phone like this. Like I realize it's just a camera. But, you know, you could be doing anything else. And then against
you have a lot of these people who, maybe not a lot, but, you know, occasionally you find someone who's like an online player and maybe has a lot of online experience, but they don't have over the board experience. Like there was even a recent game I was playing at a club against an adult player who was like around 1500, still with a provisional rating. Like it was one of his first tournaments. And there was one moment where he was taking en passant and he like wasn't sure how exactly to do it. He was like, he like made the move and he was like, is that correct? Like, am I supposed to do it like this? I was like, yeah, you're good.
That's funny.
So you do get some of that. I mean, I guess, and they're not too familiar with the whole like over the board etiquette and all that.
This opponent against me, he put his phone on the table and I could see it was on, and so I just said, hey, can you turn your phone off? And he goes, sure. And he does not turn it off and just puts it in his pocket. And I was like, that's actually worse. And then he leaves the tournament hall because he's like going to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, you're taking your phone that I saw you not turn off with you to the bathroom. Like, what are you doing? But at that point, he was already beating me, and I was like, I don't really want to make a huge thing out of, like, if it was like a close game, I would have definitely said something. But I'm like, he's crushing me. I don't think he's going to the bathroom to be like, what's the best way to finish crushing this fool? So, but it was,
yeah,
it was,
no, now that you mentioned it, there actually was an incident at a tournament that I played over the summer where supposedly someone was like seen on their phone mid game with like, ooh, a position up.
Yeah.
And he actually was, I mean, once he was caught, he forfeited that game. I mean, they let him off basically with a warning, like he wasn't expelled from the tournament.
Mm.
But yeah, you do occasionally get some things like that that come up where, you know, there's been certain allegations of like at these big money events like the World Open.
Yeah.
People are, you know, like on their phones and something like that, which, you know, can happen. It's mm-hmm. hard though when you have such big events here. The World Open has over 1,000 players and how many, you know, maybe a couple dozen directors, if that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to keep track of everyone. I think they did a better job this year of having someone posted outside the bathroom mm. and making sure people don't go into the bathroom with phones. Like you have to leave it on the table before you go in.
Okay.
So I think that was a good measure, but yeah, yeah. It's, you know, in big events, there's a lot to do to make sure everything's running smoothly.
That's funny because I feel like people are a lot more worried about cheating than they were 20 years ago when I was playing. And 20 years ago when I was playing, I felt like cheating was way more rampant because like back then the etiquette was you could just talk to people and like I would be playing a little kid. They would be clearly uncomfortable. They would get up. They would go talk to their coach for like 5 minutes. They would come back and blitz out some moves. And I'm like, maybe your coach was just giving you a pep talk, right? Like, you got this guy. But the appearance very much seemed like he gave you some moves. And the etiquette was like, that's fine. And I was like, I don't understand how this is fine. I don't have a coach following me to my games, giving me advice in the middle of the game. I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, that's definitely suspicious. But
yeah,
the kids, they just get the benefit of the doubt, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was just a thing, like I had no proof he was cheating, right? It just felt weird to me. And nowadays, if a kid kept going over to an adult and talking to them, it'd be like, hey, you can't do that. 20 years ago, that's what people did. Like you'd go, you know, have a nice conversation where we're going for dinner after the game, you know. It's like, boy, that looks, that, you know, looking back at it, I'm like, what? How is that fine? We could have been talking about anything.
I even remember like stories of some like Russian players in some American tournaments, and they'd be like, you know, chatting in Russian during the game. And it's like, yeah, you know, who knows what they're talking about? You know, to people that don't understand, it's like they could be just having a chat, but they also could be discussing the position.
Yeah, exactly. I guess my last question for you is coaching. Have you had a coach during this run that's kind of been helping guide you? Has this been a clear, totally self-guided plan? What's been happening with that?
So I haven't had a like a dedicated coach. I've had a bit of help though from, I have a couple friends who are masters who are like, I'll show them my games. One especially, like he's about 2200 FIDE strength.
Okay.
He's on that level where he's starting to make the push, like hunting for norms.
Mm.
And definitely like in blitz and short time controls, I can hang with him. Like maybe he's, you know, a little bit stronger, but it's usually pretty close. But when it comes to like classical chess and like, you know, true positional understanding, like you can just tell he's kind of like a step above. So okay. it's been good to have his input on some of the games. And like that grandmaster actually that I played, I've showed him some of my games a little bit and he's given me some tips, but okay. I haven't had like a real consistent coach. You know, once again, I've just been mostly working on my own, but yeah, it is definitely helpful to have some input from some stronger players here and there.
Gotcha. Have you been tempted at all with the sort of, I don't know if I want to call it plateau. It sounds like a mini roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Just kind of be like, maybe I can get a little help to push me over, or you just have the confidence to feel like I'm so close anyway. Maybe I'll get a coach at some later point when I'm really feel like I'm struggling.
Right. I still feel like I can get there on my own. I feel like I'm, you know, I have the components. It's just, you know, kind of putting the last couple of pieces of the puzzle into place. Yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe at some point in the future, I'll look into coaching. But yeah, this last stretch, I feel like, you know, I've gotten this far. I can get there.
Okay. So our goal is 2200 by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I see you in Vegas, that's going to be the tournament that's going to do it for you.
Okay. Hopefully, yeah.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being at the event when you make 2200 and the party you're going to throw after that last round when you hit it.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, Max, thanks so much for joining me. It was quite a fun trip to revisit your last 2 years. All of the tournaments you played. My biggest takeaway is you played so many tournaments.
Oh yeah.
Goodness.
No, I think recently I hit a milestone. So before the tournament this weekend, the previous one I played, the last round game got me to 250 over the board games since the pandemic.
Oh wow.
So I think I'm at like 253 now.
So many. And do you think playing that many games has helped you, or do you think playing that many games at times is too many? What do you think?
I think it's been helpful because, you know, you can play, you know, shorter time controls, Blitz Rapid, but Classical is kind of a thing of its own. And yeah. I feel like you need to have some consistent flow to stay in form, stay in the rhythm. So yeah, like I would recommend playing at least once a month. You know, I've been playing maybe every 2-3 weeks at times. I don't really like to play every week because I feel like it's a bit of overkill, you know, plus I have certain other, you know, commitments.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think every 3 weeks, like usually what I'll do is either play, let's say like a 3-4 round club tournament every 3 weeks, or if I'm going to play like a 7 or 9 rounder, then maybe I'll wait like a month.
Okay.
You know, to have like a good space out, but yeah, I think it's good to have some consistent games in.
Okay. So you feel like consistency leads to good form much more than like gearing up for the one big event every 3 months. And then also there's a lot of pressure that comes with that, right?
If you only play exactly. You know, there are those people who they'll only play, you know, one or two tournaments a year. Like they'll play the amateur team, so they'll play the World Open. Yeah. There's like the tournaments of the year, but yeah, it does put a lot of pressure. Like even if you do work a lot, things might just not go your way. Like we see that even like top level events right now, like let's say the Grand Swiss, which is going on, this big tournament, you have these like super strong players and they're working all the time, but they might just be having an off event. So,
yeah.
You know, if you only play once a year, it's like, it might just not be your day.
Okay. So another big takeaway, consistency is key. Okay. Well, Max, thanks so much for sharing your story. I enjoyed it. I think the listeners will enjoy it a lot and we're all rooting for you to get to 2200. And if you don't make it, Max, it's all right. You're going to get there eventually. You're going to get there. We all know you're going to get there. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on. And for those of you out there, hopefully this is the week where you make 2200. Well, probably not that many of you will this week. But if not, come back next week. We'll have another guest that will share their story with you. And I'll see you all next time. Goodbye, everybody.